Thank you for downloading this hour of Red Eye Radio. This podcast is brought to you by Freightliner Trucks.
Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America and around the world, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866. Did I say that? 90 Red Eye? Yeah, okay. RedEyeRadioShow.com. We stream live. Get our app. Put it on your phone and listen when you want. We're just scanning over different stories. You know, critical race theory is just a racist concept that needs to be, I think, exposed as often as possible.
Right.
And, you know, the left is going to continue to promote it as anti-racism when it's completely the opposite. It's time to expose it. And I, you know, look, I agree with Barry Weiss from formerly the New York Times, who stated that people are just afraid,
right?
And you know, they're afraid to come forward. And I'll read what she said again here, and this is in her article that she wrote for Substack, where she now works. Whistleblower at Smith College resigns over racism. And she writes, every day I get phone calls from anxious Americans complaining about an ideology that wants to pull us all apart or pull us all into the past. I get calls from parents telling me about the damaging things being taught in schools, so-called anti-racist programs that urge children to obsess on the color of their skin. I get calls from people working in corporate America forced to go to training in which they learn that they carry collective race-bait guilt or benefit from collective race-based virtue. I get calls from young people just launching their careers telling me that they feel like they have no choice but to profess to this ideology in order to keep their jobs. Almost no one who calls me is willing to go public, and I understand why. To go public with what's happening is to risk their jobs and their reputations. But what's being promoted by these companies and these schools is actually unconstitutional.
Right.
You can win a lawsuit on it.
Yes.
And they still do it. And then talks about Jody Shaw from Smith College, who's a liberal and had enough of it. And Jody Shaw, in a letter to Smith College, wrote, I ask at Smith College, stop reducing my personhood to a racial category. Stop telling me what I must think and feel about myself. Stop presuming to know who I am or what my culture is based on my skin color. Stop asking me to project stereotypes and assumptions onto others based on their skin color. There you go.
Yeah.
And that's where and that's where we are today in 2021.
Well, it's again, I think it's only a matter of time. Coca-Cola, in a statement, we will continue to refine our curriculum, which means this probably isn't going to be around for long.
Can you imagine sitting in the board meeting at HR when they were talking about bringing this in? Sitting in the room.
You're begging for lawsuits.
But could you imagine sitting in that? I always love to think about the fact that all these things are workshopped. People sit in, you know, the great big conference table, and they discuss it. Well, you know, should we bring into Coca-Cola the fact that people that are white employees need to be less white? Well, what makes you less white? Who is the expert on whiteness? Okay. That person over there. Go ahead. So what would this curriculum be? Well, to be less white, you need to be less oppressive, less arrogant, less certain, be less defensive, be less ignorant, be more humble, listen, believe. Break with apathy, break with white solidarity, and then you can be less white. Well, if I'm less white, what am I then? And if I'm less white, I'd have fun in these rooms. I'd be fired, but well, I would still have fun. So if I'm less white, does it mean, is cultural appropriation okay? Can I be part of another culture? What is this whole concept that you're trying to get to?
Well, and what are you setting up? Exactly. Because what would be against the company code of conduct. When you look at the list, You know, the second to the last is break with apathy. But if I'm not an activist and I'm just going about my job daily, am I breaking with apathy or not? Do I have to become an activist in order to follow this? In other words, how do you know the training is working? Well, you don't, because this stuff is essentially made up. If a company's going through a number of issues, whatever it might be, security or any other issues that they're dealing with, and they have a company, and every major company does, a code of conduct. Here is our code of conduct. Here's what we expect you, how we expect you to behave. But this is different. It's not as an employee. It's based on skin color. Something that about you that does not change when you go home, when you leave work. It is fundamentally who you are. And you're supposed to be changing it. Well, where would the violation be? How do you know the training is working? How far do you go with it? Because if you believe this is necessary, then you believe it's just the beginning. You can't possibly believe, if you believe all these things, all of these items, and this part of the curriculum, then you must believe that it's not going to happen overnight, and it's likely not going to happen through one training session. It would require multiple training sessions, which means it would have to be ongoing. And there really is no measurement. There isn't. You can have it with an individual employee and their conduct, but that's the case in any employee-employer setting. A company, if they believe the employee is not acting appropriately, then a supervisor or HR can address that based on the actions of the individual. But what about the people that just go about their day, do their job? Oh, wait, no, you have to break from apathy. You're not doing anything. You're not doing enough. How do you know?
Yeah. By the way, critical race theory is simply racism.
It is.
It's stereotyping, bigotry, intolerance, and racism. That's what it is. You know, we use the term because that's what they use, but just identify what it is. That's
right.
That's what it is.
Right.
And we all know it. Any philosophy that where you don't judge, because that's what we do. We judge people as individuals. I could care less about color. Now, the liberals tell me, no, I obsess about color. And I said, well, no, actually you do, because you're the one bringing it up.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not obsessing about color. You are. You're the one that's defining me by your color, or, you know, by my color, by color. Mm-hmm. Of skin, of something.
Mm-hmm.
That's as idiotic as saying blue-eyed people or blonde-haired people.
Right.
It's completely and totally asinine. It's infantile. It's emotional rage. As I've said before, much of the white supremacy, if you've ever seen anything on, for example, on white supremacist groups out there, is based on what? Jealousy and envy. They got something you didn't get. See how they recruit young white males. They don't recruit them with the philosophy that you're superior. They may get there at some point, but it's they got something you don't have. They're getting this government benefit.
That
they're
and fear. This. Yeah.
And
right.
Fear, yeah.
Right.
They're going to take your job. They're going to do this.
Mm-hmm. Right.
As I've always said, racism is not close to being the biggest problem we have in this country. envy and jealousy. Yep.
Well, and you know, that's interesting that you say that, because when you have major companies and institutions that engage in such policy and such training, then it does make it a huge problem that didn't exist before, this kind of behavior by those companies and institutions. I mean, think about that.
Well, that's the
how much did our country go through to make sure that this wasn't going to happen again?
Well, that's the thing, that when you grew up in our generation, you look at this and you say, for Coca-Cola and you know, for example, Smith College, you're talking about when you're our age and you either were part of the civil rights movement, observed it, or were victimized at that time. You look at this and you go, what the hell is going on? These people are embracing racism. And they seem to be getting away with it by using intimidation.
Right.
And they're successfully using intimidation as a tool.
Right.
To say, either you accept this racist thought about yourself.
Right.
Not that just we're going to view you as an evil person, but you have to go through training where you must admit you are an evil person. We want to take it a step further. You must admit.
And the basis for you being that evil person doesn't change after?
No.
That training?
No.
And is still apparent to every co-worker
because of the training.
Exactly.
The stigma has been set.
Exactly.
Your calls and comments coming up, 866-90-RED-EYE.
There are some lucky drivers whose tires won't ever touch ice or snow this winter. But for most, now is an important time to make sure your truck is ready to roll through the rest of the season. Here's a maintenance tip to help keep you rolling safely. Keep your brake air system dry and replace your air dryer cartridge if you haven't already done so this winter. Whether you have drum or air disc brakes, you should drain your air tanks of any moisture daily. Making sure air dryers are in top shape helps keep moisture, contaminants, and corrosion at bay. Find a TA truck service near you for more winter maintenance tips or to have your air brake system inspected today.
This maintenance tip is brought to you by TA Truck Service. More bays, more expertise, more solutions.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Carly, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye. Let's go to Greg in Chicago as we talk about critical race theory, Coca-Cola, the Smith College, and more. Hi, you're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show, Greg.
Good morning, Eric, Gary.
Hi.
Love your show.
Thanks.
You guys are the best.
Thank you.
The problem, you're welcome. The problem is, and you guys know this, is that it's coming to our schools, too.
Oh, yeah.
The teachings, I'll use the word teachings, that are being implemented K through 12, especially in a state like Illinois. We just ran through a series of events that was rather mind-blowing. The governor signing an anti-police bill, in many people's eyes, an anti-police bill. The advancement of more progressive thinking, K through 12, critical race theory. And we've had some discussions in Chicago about taking down statues, some statues being identified as Lincoln himself, Lincoln in the land of Lincoln. This is a complete, this is no smokescreen, as the previous caller said. This is their end game. They're out to change minds, to get people to think one way, to keep one group of people in power. And at the school system level, people are clearly, it's clearly intimidation. And the school boards know it. You saw, if you saw what happened in California where they caught those people on the mic, it's absolutely incredible. The hubris, the absolute hubris. And you guys have nailed it. I always say, you want to know who identified identity politics years ago? The guys on Red Eye. Because you called it out immediately. And this is what it comes down to now. It's taking away children from their parents. It's separating parents from their kids because parents are clearly afraid. I know because I've talked to some of them, and I've called their state legislators. They don't care. They're all Democrats in Illinois anyways. They don't care. You're wasting your breath, but you lay out these points. They listen, but they don't care. You're going to basically have to break the system. And our president right now is a complete sop to the teachers' unions. The teachers' unions are getting away with murder. The kids are not in school, and it's creating all sorts of problems.
Well, what's
very difficult.
Yeah, what's going to happen people are going to move away from that.
Yep,
the people that can are going to move away from it.
Yep,
and there will be a backlash to it because look, you can't tell you can't continually tell. They know it's wrong. These people that are intimidated by it, they know it's wrong. They know they're being treated unfairly, and eventually they will act upon it, and most likely they'll move away.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they'll do. They will move away. But the critical race theory is so blatantly racist. Everybody knows it. Like I said, nobody debates that it isn't racist. Everybody knows it is. Everybody knows it's wrong. But the intimidation factor has been so strong. And you see it with the transgender activism. But finally, you have people on the left starting to fight back.
Yeah, this is, again, you know, and as the caller was saying, we've been talking about this for years. Identity politics, it came from this idea that the left has had for a long, long time, teaching generations now. To wake up and be a victim for a different reason every single day. And it has become where, you know, there are how many different identities out there, how many different groups and subgroups. Well, every subgroup that breaks off now, by default, has an oppressor in everyone that is not a part of that subgroup. And you create more and more oppressors. Well, you're to the point where now it sounds like you're being noble when you say things like, be less white. It has been repeated so often, so loudly. It has been institutionalized, embraced by major organizations, companies, this thought that if you're white, you're part of the problem. That is bigotry.
You are the problem. You're the base of the problem, right?
And you can't change it. Right. You can't change it about yourself.
Well, look, it's no coincidence they use the same thing against the police. And remember, you're not black, you're blue.
Exactly.
That you can't be black and be a police officer.
Right.
Understand that it's the same concept all the way. We're going to judge these people. We're going to judge these people by skin color, and if they don't act like the skin color, like the stereotype of the skin color that we expect them to live by, then they truly aren't and don't identify or are not that particular skin color for our argument purposes.
Right.
It's insane, but understand their mindset is insane, but they're succeeding in moving it forward by intimidation. And people have to be willing to fight
about that, because the list starts with the way people think and act. And toward the bottom, it's when you don't act, whether you're acting or because that's what apathy is.
Yes.
Whether you're doing something or not doing something, you're guilty.
Right.
Wow.
Hey.
Let's not have to go through that again. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley on Red Eye Radio.
And he is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE, if you would like to get in. Yeah, the whole critical race theory. You can tear this thing apart very easily. You just have to get the people that are willing to do it. And these are the people that are actually, not only us, because we're on the radio, but or in the media, but others out there, like the woman at Smith's College who said she's had enough, and others. And she's a liberal, because even liberals understand that this is ridiculous. Any liberal that grew up in the civil rights era, anyone that was a Democrat back then, they understood what Martin Luther King was saying. You judge people by individuals, not as groups.
Right.
And so you look at, you know, as Barry Weiss is calling it, when she said it's illiberal neo-racism. It's what it is. Mm-hmm. And they're trying to package it, as the left is trying to do, as the opposite of what it actually is.
Right.
And it's so crystal clear and apparent, the stereotyping, the intolerance, the bigotry, and the racism of critical race theory. It's obvious. Everybody knows it. It's amazing how they've been able to muster the army of intimidation.
That's really what it is.
That's the only thing that's keeping it going, is the fact that I'll lose my job if I speak up. Nobody buys it.
Right. And this is, again, the intimidation. You must be, look, you must be a part of this. You must believe as we believe. That's very different than acting inappropriately. Being part of an agenda through a company or through an institution or organization is different than saying, you know, if they're, you know, because a lot of companies, private companies and publicly traded companies, you know, take up a number of causes, right? Nonprofit causes and have fundraisers and everything else. This is different in that it is, you need to be a part of this. This is why they, and I keep focusing on this word, apathy. You're not doing anything about it. You're just sitting there. Break from apathy. Break from apathy means you got to stand up and be a champion for the cause. You need to become an activist. Now, wait a minute. Hold on a second. If I believe this is wrong, am I breaking from apathy when I stand up and say I believe this is wrong?
And the reason Eric's bringing that up is because in Coca-Cola, the Be Less White training says be less oppressive, be less arrogant, be less certain, be less defensive, be less ignorant, be more humble, listen, believe, break with apathy, break with white solidarity are listed as ways to become less white, which means that if you're white, all these things in here are the problem with you. That's the flawed part of you based on the color of your skin.
And the color of your skin's not going to change after the training.
No.
And so the difference is, like, again, behavior. If IT comes in and says, okay, we had a security breach. Someone hacked into someone's email, or someone was sent a file that was corrupt or whatever it is. Well, you don't necessarily know who that might be. Or somebody acted inappropriately, and you don't know who that person might be. Well, when it comes to this kind of training, be less white. It's targeted at a group based on skin color. Something about themselves that they cannot change.
Right. Not behavior.
Not behavior.
Not knowing their mindset.
Right.
Not knowing the content of their character. Simply the judgment is made on skin color.
Because, like, you know, again, when you, if you were to act out, you can act out inappropriately.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it is essentially implied that it's inappropriate to be white.
Yeah.
And that's how you're making an entire group of employees feel.
Or students.
Or students, or members of an organization, whatever it might be. If that's going to be your policy, then that's how you're, this is, a, that's intimidation.
Oh, yeah. Let's head to you. We go to Kano in Tennessee. Kano, welcome. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show. Hi.
Hey, good morning, guys. I'm hearing you all talk about being less white. Well, the first thing that comes to my mind is back at the end of 2015, I believe, her name was Rachel Dolezal.
Yes.
He was the president of the NAACP out in the West Coast, and she was a liberal, and she got, I guess, the cancel culture got to her back at the end of 2015 because she identified herself as being black, so she was being less white, but she got hell for it.
And you know why?
Do you recall that?
Oh, yeah, because we covered that earlier in the show. Because we asked the question totally appropriate. I didn't bring up specifically when we brought it up. We didn't bring up Rachel Dolezal, but we brought up the whole concept is if you have to be less white. Because I said this is how I'd sit in this particular board meeting when they do. I have a question here. If you have to be less white, then how can I practice cultural appropriation if I'm going to be less white? What do I fill that in? Is cultural appropriation at that point okay? Because what Rachel Dolezal did was viewed as, yes, she might have been wanting to be less white, but she was cultural appropriating.
And eventually was defended by some liberals, by the way.
Some liberals did defend her, by the way, but not all. I think, was it on The View?
Yeah.
Where was it?
Whoopi
said, well, I guess, you know, there's no harm in it.
Mm-hmm. Today Show had her on a couple of times.
So, yeah, but no, but that's a great point. Because we said, if you're going to be less white, what do you fill that void with? Somebody else, other culture? You can't do that. That's cultural appropriation.
Right. So there really is no solution.
Well, the other thing, too, is, you know, the whole point that there's a culture of white. Which, of course, there isn't.
Well, again, if you create that, then there is no way that anyone can change that. Behavior can be changed.
Yeah. Well, look, I know. I grew up listening to the Carpenters and Barry Manilow, and still there is no white culture.
Helen Reddy.
Air Supply.
Huey Lewis in the news eventually. And the list goes on and on.
When the culture decided to get a little bit funky.
Well, no, but then we think about, no, seriously, then the boy bands, right? Well, Justin Timberlake was a few years back at a Super Bowl halftime show paying tribute to Prince. You can't do that.
Well, yeah.
That's cultural appropriation.
Well, even the liberal musicians said this is going to be ridiculous because now there's the they haven't hit it hard the last couple of years, but it exists out there that you cannot be playing music that isn't from your ethnicity, which is like, well, we have St. Patrick's Day coming up.
Well,
then everyone is welcome to play whatever you want at that point.
I mean, because under that thought, then everyone needs to demand their money back and return their Eric Clapton albums.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Rolling Stones.
Well, anything rock and roll or R&B that any white musician has done, that can't be, which is ridiculous, of course.
of course, it's that's the whole point. I mean, one of the things I love most about music is people that combine genres and in essence make a new form of music out of it by combining different influences. And different ethnic music influences. That's one of the greatest things in music when it's done.
Pre-civil rights, there is no doubt. You go back to the stories of black artists, you know, before record labels were essentially, I mean, through laws and contracts and everything else, were forced to get in line and pay artists for what's due to them. There's plenty of stories out there pre-civil rights of black artists being shunned. Mm-hmm. And this is why, and what I mentioned before, what did we go through as a nation? We went through this a huge fight, and not just one. All of this to bring about change, to not have a world where you are judged every day by your skin color, and to not have it institutionalized. Well, when you have more and more organizations, universities, corporations who are adopting said policy, that's institutionalized. That's what we worked against.
You know, we had the one caller that said it's a smokescreen for something else. No, it's not. Because the basic tenet of being a liberal today, of being a Democrat, is that you're a victim.
Mm-hmm.
And everything here with the critical race theory is about creating permanent victims. Because you create permanent oppressors, therefore you have permanent victims. Part of, if you heard when we talk about the circular firing squad, we had a circular firing squad update today where we talked about an all-male gay campground that's being now accused of being transphobic because they only want gay biological men there. That's part of the circular firing squad, because now you've created a new oppressor, and that's gay men that wish to be together. We've talked about the whole transgender, the liberal transgender activist out there, where Martina Navratilova, who was considered a hero to the gay community,
mm-hmm.
for coming out early on in her career when it wasn't as acceptable, is now viewed as an oppressor because she doesn't feel that men should be compete against women. So that's the entire thing. The entire liberalism is about creating a victim culture, creating victims and oppressors. Now, one of the things is you try to expand the range of victims, you need more oppressors. What the critical race theory movement is about is creating a permanent victimhood by creating a permanent oppressorship, and the oppressorship are white people that all are the same, and we're always going to try to change them, but no matter what they do, they can't change. Therefore, it's very easy. You've got permanent oppressor, you've got permanent victims.
And that's it, because when a society does go through a series of changes, monumental changes, including the civil rights era, and the behavior is changed. Well, wait a minute. No, you can't change the behavior. Why? Because it's part of your DNA. It's instilled in you, and you can't change that. And this is how the left wins. The left is built on people believing that they are victims, and the left is there to help them. There is no greater foundation than permanent victimhood and permanent oppressors that can't be changed.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye. Good discussion. Always love talking race things. especially when it comes to the left and critical race theory, because it's something that has to be talked about. It's something that we've never shied away from. It's the logical extension of identity politics from the Democrats. If you judge people by groups, if that's what has become really an official doctrine of the Democratic Party, don't be surprised if the left has now taken it to critical race theory. That's just the logical progression.
Sure.
We shouldn't be surprised by it. What should be more surprising is the institutionalized racism that exists because of identity politics in a major political party like the Democrats. That is, to me, what is amazing, and how quietly over the last decade it has become just solidified with Democrats.
Yeah.
And then that the how such an incredibly insane racist philosophy of critical race theory has actually found its way into major corporations, major colleges in this country. And it's been done quietly, but with a huge force of intimidation that you better abide by this, or you may not be a student here. You may lose your job.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or just starting your day, welcome to the show. From the Pilot Flying J Studios, this is Red Eye Radio.
All across America and around the world, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. RedEyeRadioShow.com, where we stream live. You can get our Red Eye Radio app and put it on your phone, and you can listen whenever you want, live or to our podcasts. Are you ready for the Cuomo quote of the day?
All right.
Chris, that is. Not Andrew.
Oh, you're going to play Fredo? Okay.
Well, I'm not going to read it. I'm not going to play it.
Oh, okay.
Right. Talking about reaching the 500,000 death mark in COVID.
Mm.
These deaths came because of how we denied the reality in this country. I mean, is there any self-awareness? I mean, you've asked that question. Is that the other virus that exists out there?
Did nobody on his staff during the meeting say, don't go there?
Well, they put it out in a tweet for Cuomo primetime. So it was an official tweet. And it said, it got this bad because too many were in denial.
My God. Chris, you care to name just one person in denial?
Ooh.
Can you name just one?
Ooh. Michael. I mean, Andrew.
Wow. Oh, my gosh.
You know, the thing is, you can't be a liberal.
He is Fredo.
You can't be a liberal and say that, because it was Trump that again was called a xenophobe for stopping China early on.
Right. Yep.
And Democrats would have continued it.
Yep.
So they've got no place to talk. I think the one thing that really got me yesterday, as what got me this past weekend too, and we brought it up on the show, was the fact that when you see how fast the hospitalizations and now the death rate, the 7-day rolling average for the death rate has been coming down the last week and a half. And we knew that would be delayed from the actual number of cases, but the number of cases are down, as we told you yesterday from the professor from Johns Hopkins, 77% new cases. You've got hospitalizations that are just crashing every day. I think we were at 32,000 being hospitalized just a month and a half ago, and now it's under, will soon be under, in the next couple of days, will be under 50,000.
Right.
In 30 days, if it continues, we'll be under 10,000 people in the country being hospitalized. You may think that's a lot, but when you have 330 million people, that's nothing.
Right.
And so you look at it, and if you've been paying attention to the numbers over the last month and a half, and you've seen the crash in the numbers, there is no way that you can't look at this unless all you are concerned about is a political narrative to have power and control over society. There's no way that you can't look at this and say, this is fantastic. I can see the light at the end of the tunnel, and it's really not that far away. And that's why you've got these, you've got people coming out and saying, by April, we should be back to normal. By May, we should be back to normal. Mm-hmm. This isn't a thing. And here you've got this incredibly optimistic news because of probably both herd immunity, that more people had it than we thought, and a combination of the number of people, elderly people, those with underlying conditions that have gotten the vaccination. And if it continues as we're going at the number that we're going every single day, in 30 days, we're going to see even more of a crash in those numbers. And all you get from the media, Fauci, and the Biden administration, you get the narrative that as if we're in the middle of the worst part of COVID.
Right.
Instead of the optimism, and you can also encourage people to do the right thing, but the optimism that we've had great success here, they think that if they, people who are going to get the vaccine, that are signed up to get the vaccine, are going to get the vaccine. This garbage that they're throwing out, well, if we give an optimistic viewpoint and tell people that we've accomplished a lot, they may not go and get the vaccine. What are you talking about? If people are passionate, the ones that don't want to take the vaccine, we know who they are. They're very clear about that. I don't want it. Not going to take it. Mm-hmm. Nothing you can do about that. But the people that are signed up right now, that's not the problem. People are still saying, I've got to wait too long. They want to get it.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's just stupid. There's this huge disconnect as to the reality of where we are in this country with COVID and the messages that are coming out from D.C.
Well, and
the media.
And the agenda from the left is built on fear. And you keep the fear going. This is exactly what they want to do. Keep that fear going. We started by let's shut down for 15 days and save some hospital beds. Now it's 11 months later, close to a year later.
And
I just saw the headline, theaters in New York, movie theaters, will be able to open March 5th to limited capacity. They were closed for pretty much a few weeks short of a year. I don't know exactly when that started, but it was early on. But they were closed for the better part of a year. And they'll just now be getting back to limited capacity. And, of course, Fauci wants you to believe that, no, we'll be wearing masks well into 2022. And because this is, they need you to believe, they need you to be afraid to move. The government needs to take action. And this is it. I mean, they're this calling and Biden floating the idea during his campaign of centralizing everything. Coming in, taking control, the FEMA rollout vaccines. Rolling out, in fact, in our neighborhood. in this county where we're sitting this week. And you see that, and they would, Biden would love to have complete control, including a mandate on masks and not just one mask.
Yeah, that's not going to happen. But as you get more people, and I agree, I think it was David Harzeni from National Review who said there's going to come a point because you're going to have a ton of people now over the next month that are going to get vaccinated, and they're going to want society to be open, and we're being thrown the opposite by government that no, it can't open. And as the professor from Johns Hopkins said, he believes, and I agree with him. I don't know whether his numbers are exactly correct, but we're told the close to 28 million people have had coronavirus in the United States. He believes it's somewhere around 200 million.
Mm-hmm.
That the death rate and everything else based on this that we have just missed. We have missed so many people that actually had the virus because they never got tested because they didn't have any symptoms at all. And then you had many people that got tested multiple times.
Right.
And some people that got it, here's the problem. I know a few people that got it 7 or 8 times to test because they had it and then it disappeared and they took another test and they had it again. It wouldn't go away. It was still there. And they ended up taking 6-7 tests.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Just to make sure. Mm-hmm. But you have a significant portion of the country that never knew they even had it.
Right.
Or the symptoms were extremely mild where they thought it was something else. And so a combination of that with the tremendous number of people, especially vulnerable elderly people that have gotten the vaccine has completely. And by the way, you can go to the COVID tracking website. Let me just see what it is. If you want to see the numbers for yourself, don't believe me. Just go to just put COVID tracking project and go down to see the data. And you can see it for yourself, and you can see the graphs, and you can see how drastically from hospitalizations, ICU, you can see now in the last week and a half, the deaths now the number of deaths are now on a slope, steady slope going down. The number of new cases drastically down, hospitalizations drastically down, and crashing each and every day more. I think there was a 3,000 amount difference in one day in the hospitalization, just where there's been like 5,000 in the last 2 days. It was like 61,000 just a couple days ago. Now it's 55,000 that are being hospitalized. It's coming down. It's amazing how fast it's happening. And you would think by watching the media and watching the Biden administration yesterday that we were in the middle of the worst part of coronavirus. My question is, why are they trying to sell that? For what? What reason except power and control?
Yes.
What would be the reason you're doing it?
No, you have to keep that fear going.
And I don't buy, well, because if we don't show the seriousness of it, then some people might not get the shots. I don't buy it.
No. No, the ones who want it are likely registered already and are waiting or have already gotten their first dose. The ones who don't want it, like you said, anti-vaxxers, we already know, all right, they're not going to get it regardless. The ones who want it are either waiting or already have their first dose at least. It's not like, oh, well, we don't have to worry about it any longer. It's behind us. It goes away. No. People will become complacent. No. We've got the protocol down.
And it looks.
Well, I'm not trying to say that I believe that everybody should take their mask off and all the offices should open up at 100%. But they're making it sound like we may never get to that point.
Yeah. And there's no reason to do that.
None.
As someone was saying the other day, Fauci is not God. Fauci is not your parents. Fauci is somebody who works for you, who's supposed to be telling you the truth,
right.
And he constantly contradicts himself.
I mean, does he have any consistency whatsoever?
No, it's really amazing.
Mind-boggling.
But watching it the last couple of days as we've approached 500,000 deaths, but watching and looking at the facts of what's actually going on, It's as if we're in two different worlds completely.
Here's what I want to know from the medical side. And we talked about this last year. Tell us where the numbers are. Tell us where, how many vaccines are out, how many doses had been administered, how many hospitalizations. And yes, where are we at? I mean, if you must keep track of it, here's how many people have died. But really, how contagious is it and how bad is it right now in the hospitals? And how effective is the vaccine and also the treatment?
And that's what we've done here.
And I don't see, because, you know, Fauci trying to extrapolate what might happen, what might be happening in 12 months. Tell me what good that does.
Doesn't do any good.
None. It does nothing. Where are we today?
And if you look at it, I mean, things are quite 64.2 million doses already have been given, and roughly 85% of the shots have been delivered, that have been delivered to the states, have been administered. So they've really improved that.
Yeah.
And a ton more coming here in the next couple of weeks, but we're at 20 doses have been, 20% of the people have got at least one shot in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And that's huge. That with where we focused it on, and the fact of now many doctors believing that the number of people that actually had it, that have the antibodies and T cells, and that's the one thing that they've talked about, is that even from the Spanish flu, that people that they examined that were still alive in 2008, still the T cells remembered it, which means they could produce the antibodies for it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not just antibodies, it's that the T cells with the memory are there, which is, you know, really interesting stuff to hear. And so they look at this and go, you know, just taking the antibodies themselves, but they believe it's way more. And this is Johns Hopkins professor that believes it may be up to 200 million people, that this thing, if it was as contagious as they said, there's no way it only affected 27 million people.
Right.
It affected 200
million. That doesn't make sense at all.
And that the vaccinations alone, especially the drop that started in January, said really can't explain it. You can explain it now. But he believes it's a combination of both. And if that is true, well, I can't tell you whether it's true or not. All I can tell you is the crashing of the hospitalizations, ICU. You now see it in the death graph, the death numbers, and the number of new cases. You can't deny those. And they are just crashing big time. And like I said, the last couple of days, it's like, am I in the same world as the White House? Am I in the same world as Fauci? What world are we living in? I'm not saying don't, you know, still be careful. And, hey, if you're not sure, take a test and sign yourself up for the vaccine. I'm just saying there's a ton of positive news out there, and we're not going to have to wait till next year. There's no way any critical thinking person, by what we're seeing right now, can make that claim based on the evidence.
You'd have to take the vaccines off the market.
Yeah. And even with the variants, that it seems like both Moderna and Pfizer, for most of them, maybe not the South African, but they said it's no problem. We're already 4 weeks into developing that new variant vaccine.
Mm-hmm.
If it doesn't work there. So there really isn't a problem long term. And he's talking well into 2022.
Right.
Where's his mind? What's the purpose of that?
Well, because he's talking policy. Remember.
866-90-RED-EYE.
The number of foreign bankruptcies last year dropped by 7% from 2019, thanks partially to a huge influx of government payments to farmers, which sent farm income overall up from 2019. Although some states did have more bankruptcies, Iowa, for example, recording the largest number of bankruptcies in 10 years. So what can we expect this year nationwide? Well, for one thing,
overall, we're forecasting farm sector income to decrease in 2021.
While expenses increase, an Agriculture Department analyst, Carrie Litkowski, told USDA's Outlook Forum that more farmers will be in more debt.
We think more of their production is going to have to go to making debt payments.
However, according to Nate Kaufman with the Federal Reserve Bank of Kansas City,
I don't know that it's necessarily clear that we will see an outright increase in bankruptcies as a result of that.
He says the increase in farm income last year may help many struggling producers stay in business this year. Gary Crawford reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
The USDA report is brought to you by Cenex Roadmaster XL Premium Highway Diesel Fuel.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio, the Circular Firing Squad update coming up.
Yeah, we'll talk about that and what might happen on Capitol Hill with $1.9 trillion at stake. It passed a House committee yesterday. What might be in the future in the next couple of days?
Eric Harley and Gary McNamara take your calls all night. Red Eye Radio.
And he is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Okay, we like talking world records. This is one I wouldn't want.
Okay.
A new blood alcohol record recorded by highly intoxicated Oregon motorist.
Okay.
From thesmokinggun.com. How is this guy alive? He had a .778. That's a .7 rounded off to a .78. That's almost 10 times the legal limit. This guy apparently crashed his car following a police chase last Friday afternoon in Oregon. How are you alive?
I don't even know what the calculation is to how much you would have to drink in what period of time to be at that point. He would essentially have to still be drinking while they were giving him the breathalyzer.
Okay, 150 pounds, a regular drink, if you're 150 pounds, would be 0.02. So four drinks would be 0.08 in your blood system. So you might have drank five, but four in your blood system.
Okay.
So 40? 40 drinks?
Pretty much.
In your blood system.
Mm-hmm. That's how people die of alcohol blood poisoning.
Well, normally you're dead if you have 0.5. Because I've seen where people are, you know, 0.28 or 3, and you're like, oh, how are you even conscious? Mm-hmm. I have no idea how somebody could. And I went, has anybody ever been close to that before? Yep. The previous high was another, wow, Oregon stand proud, another Oregon woman in 2007, a 0.72. Yeesh. And then a South Dakota woman in 2009, a 0.708.
I don't even know that I'm safe to drive home after talking about these stories. Seriously, how do you get to that level?
I guess when it's that high, if you're the law enforcement officer taking that breathalyzer, you got to do it twice, don't you? Because you have to think when it comes out 0.778, you've got to be thinking, I better take this again because maybe the breathalyzer isn't calibrated correctly.
Well, if once you pull them over, you walk up and the first thought in your mind is don't light a match. I mean, because what is that? What would that even? You would have to smell that a mile away.
Yeah. In all seriousness, at that level, you might as well be shooting a gun. Just in every direction, if you're driving a vehicle.
I don't even know how you're sitting up.
I don't know how you're conscious. Because at that level, I mean, if it's in the unless it was an extremely short period of time, and the guy just ingested on an empty stomach bottles of hard liquor,
and he's never had a drink in his life before,
because you would think that by any significant period of time, for that to digest and then create the ether in your brain, which then puts you out. Which is why you pass out.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see how.
Yeah, I don't know.
Well, the human body.
Well, and
it's a chemistry set. Well, I
wonder if the protocol changes, because you take them in, they're sitting in a jail cell, but man, you're gonna have to watch them to make sure they don't die.
Yeah. Officers observed several alcoholic beverage containers within the vehicle, according to Warm Springs Police Department in Oregon.
Hmm.
The motorist, who was facing multiple criminal charges, was driving on a suspended license due to a prior DUI conviction.
Shocked.
Yeah. According to investigators, the driver, who had not been named pending the filing of criminal charges, was involved in a hit and run. Upon locating the suspect vehicle, a Ford Explorer, cops sought to pull over the driver, but he sped away. A short chase ended when the man, who cops described as highly intoxicated, lost control of his car and crashed into a concrete barrier.
Wow.
Wow. That's, jeez.
Unreal.
That's not social drinking.
No. No, it is not.
But like I said, that's as, you know, drinking to begin with, DUI to begin with, is
yes,
like shooting a loaded gun. But
you're a weapon.
This guy, my God, I don't even. There's no words to describe. Number one, you're just amazed at how the human body could handle that amount, and then you think of how dangerous he was on the road.
Right.
Unbelievable.
Wow.
A couple of other stories to bring you. Merrick Garland, the President Biden's attorney general nominee, as I'm reading here, repeatedly avoided providing direct answers to questions from Republican senators.
Of course.
During Monday's hearing before the Senate Judiciary Committee. He dodged questions about the Durham investigation, transgender athletes in high school sports, and whether crossing the border illegally should be a criminal offense.
From now on, can we just not play? Let's not do this. Let's just make it entertaining and just play dodgeball. You know, the question came up. Senator Kennedy, I believe, from Louisiana, asking about identity politics and got to the point of, you know, all right, should a male be able to play in girls' sports? Dodge, 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 dodge. Very complicated issue. Well, that's why you're here. You're going to be the AG.
Yeah, but then he let him
if
off
you're
the,
confirmed.
But he let him off the hook. I saw that.
Well, they always
he just,
do.
He was like, okay, then fine.
No,
like,
they
why'd
they
you let
always,
him off the hook?
Make they it, always do. As Attorney General, how will you act? That's why we're here. And I expect an answer.
Right. You're not a federal judge here.
No, you're not.
You're going to be Attorney General. It's okay to ask you how you interpret a particular, Title IX. I think that's a legit question. And that's the thing. They were almost treating him. I was thinking about that yesterday because I almost got caught up in thinking for a moment that it was a confirmation hearing of a Supreme Court justice.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why, because it's Merrick Garland. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking, wait a minute. He's an Attorney General nominee. You can answer these questions. I believe in Title IX.
You're going to be the top cop, and you're going to be enforcing policies.
I believe that women should be protected, and Title IX is about this. Well, I need to see. You don't know what Title IX is about?
Right.
That question wasn't. And Kennedy just let him off the hook. on the Durham investigation, it was more, I really don't know what he's done. I can't answer until I talk to him and find out where he is, which is a question, which is an answer you can get away with. I don't
because
know what Durham's
it's likely the truth, given what we know about Durham and the fact that there's not a lot that comes out of his office.
Right.
And there wouldn't be because Merrick Garland is not privy to that at this point.
Right.
And until he's confirmed and sworn in, he won't be.
Now, on illegal border crossing, what he said was, well, you know, our resources are stretched, so the question is whether it will be a priority, and I can't answer that yet.
Uh-huh.
Because that's what Democrats do. Well,
right.
We can't, as the Department of Justice, there's too many other things we can't handle. Border crossings, they don't matter. That's what a Democrat attorney general normally will say to this. The only one that I accepted was really the Trump-Russia probe, because he doesn't know what Durham has.
Right.
So when he answered, he goes, I don't know what he has, so I can't answer that.
Right.
He was asked whether he would allow the report to be public. He said, well, I got to talk to him and find out what he's looking at. I don't know.
Right. Yeah, because the report, to be clear, will be a report to the attorney general.
Right. Right.
It is not a report to the public. Durham does not issue a report to the public. He issues it to the AG, and the AG decides then if it becomes public. But his duty is to the attorney general.
Right.
So,
but the other two are clearly defined laws that exist.
It's not that hard. But you can't put your agenda up there on the table.
But he did answer the question on illegal immigration, because by saying that I don't know how it's going to be prioritized means you're going to prioritize it at the lowest level, which means it's not going to be the focus of the Department of Justice.
Essentially, indirectly, he answered the questions about the whole identity politics.
Yes,
too, because he didn't say no.
Right.
And it really came down to, you know, yes or no questions. And it came down to what Title IX is.
Well, here's what I would ask. Title IX talks about women.
Mm-hmm.
Do you believe that women should be protected? And do you believe that in the law of Title IX that was passed by Congress, that the intent of Congress, do we have to do it all? That the intent of Congress was that it apply to women or boys who believe that they're women?
Right.
Or girls, whatever.
Well, I would use the precedent set by the Obama administration, Joe Biden as the vice president in that administration, and the joint edict. And in that joint edict to public schools, including the Department of Justice, they cited that it was their interpretation of Title IX. So, Mr. Garland, is it also your interpretation of Title IX? Why is this so difficult?
Right. Because my question would be, is your interpretation of Attorney General, because this is the important question, is your interpretation of the Attorney General, as the Attorney General, going to be the interpretation of Joe Biden?
Do you agree with that interpretation from the former AG, Loretta Lynch?
Well, because the whole point is, Garland, and this is why you would have used it, Garland was trying to portray himself as not going to be political like the last administration, where Barr was doing whatever Trump wanted, which isn't true.
It's not true.
But that's what he's trying to sell it, which is why Republicans should have used it against him and said, since you're making the case that you don't want to be like the last administration and the last attorney general, then my question to you would be, you seem not to be able to answer the question about Title IX. I will ask it this way. Are you then going to take the same interpretation? Because it's clear Title IX, when it was passed, was for biological women, biological girls. Are you going to take the opinion of the Biden administration that it means any male who believes they are female?
Right.
Are you going to agree with the Biden administration, or are you going to go by what the intent of the law was when passed by Congress?
Pretty simple.
866-90-RED-EYE.
There's a new Shell Rotella engine oil for gas engines. Shell Rotella Gas Truck is available now. Megan Pino, Shell Rotella Global Brand Manager, tells us what was behind the development and more about the product.
Obviously, Shell Rotella's heritage is heavy-duty engine oil, and that will remain our heritage. And we know that our customers work hard, but they also love to play hard. And many of our customers also own a gasoline-powered pickup truck, SUV, and perhaps as a personal vehicle or as part of the business. We also know that truck owners use their trucks for different purposes than a car, to be able to tow something, whether that's an RV or a boat for fun on the weekend, for, you know, your business, for hauling equipment. So you're doing something different with your truck than you are with a car. And so why use the same motor oil that you would in your car as your truck? There are three viscosity grades, 0W20, 5W20, and 5W30, which covers any gasoline-powered pickup truck or SUV in terms of the manufacturer recommendations.
For more, go to Rotella.com. This engine report is a service of Shell Rotella.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Well, Mike Lindell from MyPillow got his wish yesterday.
Yep.
Dominion Voting System has sued him for $1.3 billion in damages. In the complaint, the company cites a number of statements made by Lindell, including media appearances, social media posts, and his so-called two-hour documentary claiming to prove widespread fraud, election fraud, they wish to use as part of the evidence in the defamation lawsuit.
You know, and he had said that where you started, you know, he got his wish. He said, look, I hope they do come after me, and they did. I think it was inevitable. His net worth is somewhere around $300 million, reportedly, and his company, of course, keeps generating more revenue for him in terms of his net worth. That's probably only going to grow, and so, you know, and you're going to go through those pockets.
They're making that point.
Yeah.
The Dominion says he's well aware that the independent audits and paper ballot recounts conclusively disproving the big lie. But Lindell sells the lie to this day because the lie sells pillows. So legally what they're saying is
it's directly tied to his business.
And is that true? Are his sales up?
Well, that's what they would have to show. They
would have
to be able to demonstrate that in court to say, or demonstrate some kind of proof that he believes it would drive sales up, even if it effectively did not.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.